Welcome to the Intentional Parenting Podcast. My name is France Taillard. I am a mom and parenting coach. I coach moms how to consciously parent their child and re-parent themselves using human design and other tools. Each week, I bring you a message to guide you on this journey we call parenting. Why? Because it is one of my biggest skills and talents in life as a 3-5 splenic projector is to be a problem solver. I experience many different things and situations, and I use that experience to guide you to find creative solutions to your challenges. My goal is to guide you to experience a deep, authentic connection with yourself and your child. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Intuitive hit to rename this podcast, and to celebrate that, putting together a 10-day series with some amazing moms to guide you on this journey. As part of this relaunch, I have two amazing prices, each valued at $333. All you have to do is leave a podcast review, take a screenshot of the review, share it on Instagram, make sure you tag me. Or you can simply share on Instagram that you are listening to this podcast and tag me. You have until February 11th to enter. And every time you enter, you have a new entry. You can enter as many times as you desire. Thank you in advance and good luck. All the details for this giveaway are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to today's episode. Today we have a wonderful guest. We have Tina with us today. Welcome, Tina.
Hello.
So Tina is a wonderful intuitive mom, wife, and business owner. So just tell us briefly about yourself, Tina.
Ooh, I like this question. Okay, so I'm a mom of one, Julian. He is such a blessing in my life. I have a business with one of my really good friends who I actually met on social media. We find it so funny how just our initial connection. Anyway, so we run a self-publishing house, and we're actually in the process of starting a new brand, and we haven't launched it yet, so I can't really share any details with that, but we were coaches, and we're bringing in human design. In the self-publishing world, we help people become authors. And I'm married to my incredible soulmate. He walked into my world 3 months after I left an 11-year relationship, and I thought I was gonna have to wait 11 years to find the one, but he came so fast. So yeah, just so much there with energetic alignment and listening to my gut. And yeah, that's a little bit about me in a nutshell.
I love that. And you and I met online as well.
Yeah, we did. We did. Yes.
We met through the world of human design. So let's use that to jump into our conversation today. So let's talk about human design and how it helped you, your marriage, and even your connection with your son.
Ooh, okay. So it has helped me. Well, first and foremost, I dove in and I was studying my own chart. And at the time, I wasn't necessarily able to read charts, but I had a reading done, and I received it in a way where somebody had written a reading for me. And I remember reading through it the first time, and like, I just didn't understand it, but I just kept reading it. There was just something that kept resonating, even though I didn't necessarily fully understand it. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Course in Miracles. It's like, mm-hmm. You read a page and you're like, what is this? But you keep reading it, or you keep the book in your home because the energy of it is just so transformational. So that's how human design felt. It was introduced to me probably 5 years ago. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, this is like, you know, this is just like one other thing that I don't have time for. And it was just not the right time. And I remember it was like laid in bed and I was scrolling Instagram, and it was just like one thing led to another. And then boom, I landed on somebody's page who was offering readings. So it's helped me understand myself in such a deep way. It has helped me heal so much of my past that I didn't even understand about myself. It's helped me close chapters within myself with things that have gone on that I never had closure with. It's helped me fulfill dreams like leaving my salon business, which is my former career, because of just the integration of trusting my gut. And every time I would go to the salon, it was never the clients. I loved the client. I always loved the people that I attract to me. It was the job, and the standing and the breathing and the chemicals, and that part wasn't enjoyable anymore. But I didn't listen to my gut for years, 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 years. So it's helped me even with that, like fulfilling my dream, aligning deeper with myself, gaining curiosity about how to become, a better wife, how to help my husband understand himself. And then my son came into the world, and my goodness, this chart is so interesting. And I just feel so incredibly blessed to have this tool available. I literally think of, like, whether it's my mom or moms before our generation, how envious they must be to not have had this tool to, like, while raising us when we were little. And oh, like it almost like breaks my heart at the thought of that they didn't have this tool. And I just feel so, I don't know, like I just feel like it is such a golden tool for your home. Like outside of growing a business and all that stuff, like transformation starts at home. We can't be wonderful people out there and then assholes at home to the people that we love, that we live with, right? Like the transformation happens at home within yourself, at home with, the people that you live with, whether you still live at home with your parents or wherever, whoever. That's where it starts. And that's, I just, there's so much symbolism in the human design. That it really guides you inwards to really look at yourself and like ex radically accept yourself, the parts of ourselves that we might not love. Like I have an undefined spleen, and the low frequency of that undefined spleen is staying in things long past the expiry because of comfort and fear. And, just understanding that about myself and not beating myself up about that, because I'm 36. Yeah, I'm 36, and I can see patterns in my life. I'm like, whoa, I stayed in that relationship 11 years. Okay, then I stayed in the job an additional 15 years. So it's like, whoa, okay. Like, I don't want to be repeating this pattern just because I'm unaware of the unconscious part of needing comfort or whatever it is. So, yeah.
Yeah, so much of what you said deeply resonates with me as well. And it's funny because I have the opposite. I have a defined spleen, which is also how I'm meant to make decisions, right? And I'm looking back at my life thinking, whoa, like my spleen was communicating with me, but I wasn't listening because I didn't know the importance of it.
Yes.
So yeah, so I love what you said about our parents. And this is it. Like, we live in a time and age where this information is accessible to us. It's accessible to everybody, right? And for me, like you mentioned it as well, like the listening to your gut. And I think that's one of the biggest things, that if we can teach our children how they are uniquely meant to make decisions and the importance of listening to their inner knowing, it will shift so much for them in their life. It's one of the very powerful tools inside human design.
Yeah, and I love that it has this resonance and like almost like this vibrational tone of you are so unique. And it's like laser your focus and like stay in your lane of you. It's like get to know you. And I've been fortunate to have had incredible yoga teachers that like guided me to embody the practice of yoga, then teach it. And so that's kind of where my inward journey started. But I just remember reaching a point when, it was like I had got all the certifications, I traveled to do, retreats and all this stuff. Then I did the studying with the monks and all this stuff with meditation, all this, all these cool things. And then I became a mom. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have the time to sit for an hour anymore, or like even 20 minutes. So I had to really find new ways to understand myself and almost, again, give myself that radical permission to kind of loosen that grip on, you know, the, in quotations, the consistency that I was taught with yoga every day, meditation every day. And as an individual with an undefined heart, I've learned that that's actually not my rhythm. Mm-hmm. Even though I have the consistency arrow facing left, it's like, it's just given me so much permission. And I've never felt so strong in my stance of who I am. And I know I have that defined G center, but it's almost like I've had this defined G center, this strong sense of self, almost like yes and no's, like move through my body ongoingly, but never in a way where it's like I've come out of the closet with all that, like with my way of being. You know, it's always been like, oh, is it safe to say this? And is it okay to do that? And it's like, but I trust that my intentions are always so pure. So like, just show up as you. So it's also given me permission with that as well.
Yeah. And I love that. And even with, like, it's funny because my mom and I were having this conversation the last week because she was beating herself up for not doing yoga every day and not meditating every day. And it was like, okay, well, I agree. And it comes to that point where you have to identify like, okay, well, am I doing this as like a way to self-sabotage, or am I doing this because I don't have, that's not how I'm built to have that consistency in my life, you know, because she also has an open heart and all those things. And it comes to like, it just allows you to release all those narratives that society gives you about, you know, what success needs to look like or what self-care needs to look like, and really build it on how it resonates with you. So I love that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your son. So I just want you to give the audience like an example of how listening to your intuition, listening to your gut, and connecting with your child using his human design chart has helped you. So do you want to expand a little bit on the sleep situation?
On the sleep situation. Oh my goodness. Yes, absolutely. So when my son was born, you know, less than 24 hours when he was born, he was immediately admitted into the NICU and put on feeding tubes. And so, you know, like there's that opportunity to breastfeed, all of the plans just right out the window. Mm-hmm. And so this sort of like unexpected start and this like very scary start for a new mom, it just rocked my core. And I actually didn't realize it in the moment until later when my body, like I got vertigo, my body, it was almost like my body, after everything was like settled and we had all these answers with doctors and stuff, it was like all of a sudden then I started to break down. But so this is the reason why I'm sharing this is because the sleeping together started because I literally felt like I had to keep one eye open to make sure that he was breathing. Mm-hmm. And so when he was born, he was breathing 2 breaths per second. So it was very like extremely fast. And so we slept together. And when he was little, like he, you know, would sleep between me and my husband. And sometimes there were phases where it would just be me and the baby and me and my son. And then my husband would sleep in the other room. Like we've kind of transitioned through so many different ways. We even got a king size bed, so that way there was just room and space. Then we put, you know, his crib beside our bed so we can all line up comfortably. And that's where the co-sleeping started. Going into becoming a mom, it's like I watched a group of individuals who I was friends with, you know, do the co-sleep, or not the co-sleeping, do like the really strict cry it out methods, you know, sleep training methods. And I remember at the time thinking like, okay, like, you know, it's great. You have this child. They don't disrupt your life so much. You can still have a life. You can still sleep. Like I was trying to create certainty, even before Julian came into my world, right? And so I'm trying to do, you know, plan ahead and all this stuff. And so when, you know, that whole idea of like the whole sleep training him, you know, at the 4 month mark, I can't remember the youngest age that you can do it, kind of went out the window. I was like, you know what? I am actually enjoying this closeness with him. And I noticed that he's just like a very physical, like he's a very physical touch kind of kid. And he just loves like just being close. Like even now as like a 2.5-year-old, like he will just like, if he could get it back inside my belly, he would. He's just always against me. And so at 2.5 years old, we're still sleeping together. But because of human design, I've learned that, and I've been told this by 3 different human design facilitators. So it's like, okay, Tina, for the 3rd time you're being told this, like, please do something about this. And so I have a defined sacral. My child doesn't. And my child has never slept through the night, and he's 2.5. And there was a period where we did bring in sleep training methods that were very gentle. And I think I think he slept through the night once or twice. So we've always either slept in the same bed or in the same room. And he's never slept through the night. And so I'm learning that as a defined sacral, and actually I have so many defined centers that he doesn't, I literally, it's like, if I could envision what his energetic body is doing, it's like being, like, I don't want to say electrified, but just so activated. And I know that it disrupts his sleep. And so in the last, I'd say 7 days, I've been experimenting with things like laying down with him to fall asleep. And then I leave and I let him have like that, like a good stretch of sleeping. He usually wakes up for a bottle like midnight, 1 o'clock. And then he'll have his bottle. And when I stay in bed with him, because he's sleeping in my bed, so it's like I got to get kicked out of my own bed. When I stay in bed with him, he wakes up lately, it's like every hour for a bottle from like 1 to 4. And like, I'm exhausted. So what happened last night, actually, it's more recent, this example, is that I fell asleep with him at 8:30 p.m. And by 1 a.m., I woke up like ready for the day. So I got myself out of bed. He slept so well from 1 to 5. I gave him a bottle at 1. He slept until 5 a.m.
He's usually up 4 or 5 times. Yeah, that's interesting.
That is huge progress, but that's because I didn't lay in bed trying to get myself back to sleep. I was awake in bed. I wasn't tossing. I like got myself out of bed, removed myself from the room, and literally like just went to lie down on the couch downstairs in my living room. And he had that like really long stretch without a bottle. He cried for a bottle again at 5. And then by that point, I was up until 5 and I just like laid beside him and I just like fell into a deep sleep. Like I was very delirious at that point. But yeah, it's like this testing ground of like, wow, my sacral, defined sacral, really impacts him. And it doesn't matter if I'm exhausted or if I'm not exhausted. Just having that active sacral center, it impacts him. The same with the full moon. Every time there's a full moon, he's so impacted. And like we're sleeping, him and I right now, but as of like maybe, I don't know, 10 nights ago, it was me and my husband and him in the middle. We have this big king size bed and he couldn't even get to sleep. Like he was so restless. And my husband's a defined sacral generator as well. So it's like 2 sacral centers with this like 1 open center and this little human is just like, probably so stimulated. It's like, like he doesn't even know what to do with himself.
Yeah, because the sacral center is a motor center. It's an energy center, right? So he's picking up on your energy. And one of the first things that I learned inside human design was that specific thing. Like people that have a defined sacral should not be sleeping with people that have an open sacral, because it impacts their energy. And I can
Mm-hmm.
say the same is true for myself. Like, I have an open sacral, my daughter has an open sacral. We can kind of sleep together. She does sleep way better if I'm not in the bed. But my partner has a defined sacral, and I have actually stopped sleeping with him because it just impacts my sleep so much. So it's an interesting thing to say. And I mean, you've known intuitively that you are impacting his sleep, and then you've been told, like you said, three times, right? So it's really at this point, it's really looking like trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work, and looking within and doing that reflection work, because you enjoy the snuggles, you enjoy the closeness as well, and he does too, right? But then it's also impacting his sleep and all that. So it's working with everything and not making those drastic moves until you feel good inside about it. So we'll
So it's
continue
like
to
the
work on
little micro
that.
steps and micro shifts, right? Like I really see the value. I mean, I've also been implementing a lot of the tools that you've shared with me. Like the last 3 nights are, he's had the best sleeps that he's had in a while. Although last night that stretch was really long because I was out of bed. But I've been like sweeping his back and clearing his energy. I've been massaging his feet. We'll put on like essential oil in the room, which it's so funny. We were doing this throughout his entire life. It was just not consistently because we weren't sure what to look for, right? We didn't make the connection, but almost intuitively we were drawn to do the things like massage him and relax him. And now we start his bedtime routine at like 6, and we give him like so much time, like literally 2 hours to unwind. No TV at night. Like we've dramatically shifted what we do in the household, and even just like spending more time with him at night so that way he feels bonded and connected. So we're not depending on the sleeping together to feel bonded and connected. It's almost like I'm starting to feel ready to sleep on my own, or at least with my husband again,
Well,
So.
I love that. I love that. And yeah, I mean, there's so many things that we can do. And especially the bedtime routine looks very different for a generator versus a projector. So it's really getting to know what that looks like and experiencing with that. So I love that you're doing that. Okay, let's talk about self-awareness a little bit. And I mean, it falls into the human design realm. But tell me how self-awareness impacts the way you show up as a parent.
How does it impact the way I show up as a parent?
Like
It
from
like,
what?
sorry, go
Oh, go
ahead.
ahead. No, I was just gonna say, like from what I can tell from other conversations that we've had, like you're aware of a lot of things, and it allows you to show up like internally, and it allows you to show up like better for your child, like more clean slate, if that makes sense.
It stops me in my tracks. It stops me in my tracks. I remember a time in my life when I would pray to just see clearly, really see the truth of what was in front of me. And I'm sure at that time I was, just getting to know my ego a little bit more. And I literally have these moments where I can feel my conditioning. Like it's almost like this bubbling, like almost like you're boiling water, and like it just I can feel it inside of me. And I'm grateful to have, done the inner work to know that, like, moving from that place, even though I'm aware that I'm moving from a place of conditioning, actually it doesn't serve me, because then I'll feel guilt and shame. But more importantly, it doesn't serve my child. And I just feel like, I don't know if this is because I became a mom later than I originally had planned in my like life plan. Like I always used to say, oh, I'm gonna be a mom when I'm 27, or and it happened, like probably, I don't know, 6 years later or whatnot. Like I just feel so rooted. I just feel so rooted. And I know that like having Julian really roots me. Cause I don't know, like I just like he's so precious, and it's like I just like realized how impacted I was by my parents, who did the best that they could. And I just think, oh, like, I want to do better. And not that my parents didn't do good, but they did good to the best of their ability. So it's like, if I have all this awareness, like, I owe it to myself and him and my husband to just bring in this beautiful energy into our home and like lead from that place. It's almost like I've been studying it for so long, the whole like self-awareness, mindfulness, yoga, meditation. And now it's like becoming a mom has like really, it's really pulling it out of me. It's not just what I teach, you know, to my clients when I coach them or when I was teaching yoga. It's like, it's literally an embodiment now because I'm a mom and like, I have to think on my feet and be in discomfort and be in uncertainty a lot. And, it's almost like I have these moments where I'm like so proud of the woman I've become. And I really feel like motherhood has really helped me arrive.
Yeah.
Even though I feel like it's not a destination, but it just feels like it's like I've landed and now I just get to continue, you know?
Yeah. It opens up like drastically. Mm-hmm. and it's an observation and it's an awakening that happens for so many moms and so many of my guests and clients and all that. And I feel like the human design piece also accelerates that self-awareness and that awakening. But I love that. So let's talk about uncertainty here for a moment because you brought that up. So I know you shared like parts of your story, the unexpected things that happen at the birth of your child. But how do you deal? How do you cope with that uncertainty? Because I know that, you know, so many people have had to deal with uncertainty in like so many various ways in their lives, but specifically over the last 2 years. So what are your insights to cope with that uncertainty?
Yeah, so first thing that comes to mind is a meditative type of practice, whether that's sitting, whether that's, you know, meditating, breathing mindfully while you're breastfeeding, whether that's cooking dinner, cleaning, journaling. Meditation can really, you can curate it to align with where you are in your life. And just adapting and really looking inward and journaling when you feel resistance and being so honest with yourself on paper, what that is, what the feeling is, identify it. And that way you have the knowing. So identifying it actually brings a little bit of certainty. So that way you're not in this like, you know, feeling like uncertainty is like, you know, it's like you're walking in a room and the lights are off and you're just like, I can't see, right? But it's like to just be still and really connect deep into the like depths of your heart. I remember in the hospital when the nurse, like, you know, it was a kind of an abrupt, like she came into the room, we stayed overnight, she came into the room. And at this point, we didn't know that Julian, you know, his breathing was rapid. And she just kind of like, even just her reaction, she's like, oh my gosh, has he been breathing like this? She kind of like pulled him off my chest. And that was like, from that moment, it was like sterile table, crying baby. I could tell he wanted, where's my mom? And it was like, this wave of peace just washed over me. And I remember looking at my husband and he was starting to like kind of break down. And I'm like, I was so numb, but it's like, when I look back, it was like, I was partially numb, but I was partially holding the peace that I had cultivated prior to like the meditating before bed and like all the yoga and all that stuff. It's like, I feel like the things that we do every day is like a dress rehearsal for what's to come. So it's like when you have self-awareness of something you might need in the moment, like it could be like taking a vitamin or something. It's like, or getting outside for fresh air, you know, it's like when we get these intuitive hits or these gut pulls, it's like really lean into that and follow that. That is your, like, whether it's your higher self or intuition, or it's like your it's like your body's language or something. I don't even have the words, but just really listening to that, because that will help you navigate anything. So, I mean, that's a very long answer, but meditation, do something that brings you deep peace. And if it's like, I don't know, like cuddling with your child, like maybe that's what brings you deep peace, or like dancing. Like, I don't know, dancing doesn't bring me deep peace, but it like gives me a release and then I feel peaceful. So it's really going inward and asking, like, how can I cultivate more peace within me? Because I feel like peace helps with uncertainty.
It does. And what I would add too is, like, sometimes when we're in those moments, it is hard to sit down to meditate or to breathe or to just reflect or journal or any of that. So even, like you said, the dancing or moving your body in any way, shape, or form prior to sitting down will help you go deeper. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to what you said, and I'm reflecting on my own journey. But yeah, when you feel that resistance to look deeper at what that feeling is, and oftentimes when you're able to kind of shine the light on your fears, then it's not as scary anymore. Mm-hmm. And then you can even take the steps further to, like, take whatever aligned action needs to be taken to alleviate, or to try to, I don't know, solve the problem or deal with the uncertainty or whatever it is that needs to happen within, or, you know, in the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. One last question I want to ask you about apologizing to your kid, to your child. What is your, I mean, I know that the way I look at apologizing to my child, I highly believe that it is important to do when whatever happens, you know, whether we lose control or we make a mistake or whatever it is, how big or small it is important to apologize to our children. I love to guide my clients to take it one step further. And if you're constantly apologizing to your child for whatever behavior, well, maybe it's time to look a little bit deeper and see how you can take responsibility to shift that behavior instead of always apologizing. But I'd love to hear what you have to say about apologizing to your child.
Yeah, so apologizing, it's so much for him and so much for me, and just the energy in our home, and even, you know, my husband observing me apologize. And it's, I really feel like it just helps to harmonize the energy. I feel like everything is energy, and energy, I mean, I just feel energy so deeply. So, you know, with kids, it's like, you communicate with them, and some kids understand all of it, and some kids are like, they're not sure. But I almost feel like apologizing and starting at a young age, as soon as like they're able to even grasp, it's like, it really opens the lines of communication. So, and that's really what I think all parents want, you know, especially in this world today with mental health and just, you know, like there's a client that I started working with when she was 11 years old. Now she's off to university, and, you know, she's gone through waves of like cutting her wrists and being in a psych ward. And so having seen this beautiful individual go through this, like just seeing mental health face to face, because I work with her twice a week, has been so eye-opening that it's inspired me to, I don't care how my ego feels about apologizing to my child, I will apologize. And I've also listened to, like, you know, like inspirational talks from dads who, you know, like their child committed suicide, and then, you know, wisdom that they're offering parents is like, check in on your kids, like communicate with them, let them know that you're there. Don't be too busy for them. So, you know, apologizing for me, it's just so deeply rooted in just the ripple that I want to create in our home, in his life, in his future, with his future partner if he decides that path, or his future kids if he decides that path, and just like anybody that he crosses paths with. I will say though, if you over apologize, again, it can give mixed signals, right? Because even the other day, Julian, I don't know, something happened. He did something on his own and like hit his foot, and he's looking at me and, you know, looking for acknowledgement. I'm like, okay, you know, did you hurt yourself? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, Mama, say sorry. And I had to pause, and the pausing, you know, as parents, we don't need to like know it all and like need to respond right away. But I paused and I thought, okay, I'm like, you know, Jules, like, I'm sorry that your foot feels hurt. And like, I was trying to communicate in a way, like I wanted to make sure that like, he's not connecting it to every time he's feeling hurt that it's mom's fault. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just this like fine dance. And then of course he's 2.5, right? So you're really trying to, you know, use language that he understands. But yeah, like I know, yeah. Like you don't want to overdo it, but you really want to do it when it, like when it's really, yeah. Like when, yeah, when it really when it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that what it does too, and you said it there, that we have to pay attention to the over-apologizing, right? In the sense that like your kid will maybe blame everything on you, or that it's like, okay, well, if you're apologizing the same thing, like how can you shift your behavior, right? But I love that you said that, like it opens the line of communication. And I think the big piece here is that we have a hard time as parents sometimes to put aside our ego because, you know, but by apologizing, we're showing our kids that, you know, I am older, but it doesn't mean I'm better. And it doesn't mean that I do everything right. And it also doesn't mean that I'm perfect, right? And it is, it allows our child to see that, like, we're not perfect, but we're going to try to do better next time, right? And just because I'm older doesn't mean that I do everything right or that I'm, you know, whatever. And it allows for trust to happen, right? Because yeah, it just allows you to build trust on a deeper level. So I love that.
Yeah. Trust is big. Trust is a big one.
Oh, trust is a big one. It is very big. And it starts with, I think, yeah, like putting aside your ego is a big part of having a deep trust with your child. But that could be a whole other conversation.
I know. It's like, that's a whole other episode. We'll come back.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. Do you have anything else you want to share with the moms listening today?
That you're doing an awesome job, regardless of where you are on your self-awareness path. You know, you're doing the best you can with the awareness that you have, and just keep going. And when you can't do it for yourself, you look at those beautiful, precious faces and you do it for them until you can do it for yourself. So
beautifully said. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
If you desire guidance from me every week, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and also follow me on Instagram or TikTok. I want to leave you with this quote. Great parenting happens when you start controlling yourself and stop controlling your child. Parenting is more about reparenting yourself as it is about parenting your child. This is a process. This is a journey, and I am here to guide you one connection at a time.